Taylor Decker's on my all 22 fantasy team. Stop. They don't care.
So the strategic component to this game is through the roof.
Your predictions, right? Your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player?
This is going to, it's going to change the industry.
Yeah. I moved to the old town where it goes down. Look at me now. I wrote my goals down. I hold it down. Made myself proud. Say, look at me now.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All-22 NFL Podcast, the official podcast of the All-22 Fantasy Football Platform, the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personnel packages and have access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, go to all-22.com or go to the App Store and download the app today. Ray, it is officially playoffs. It is week 15. How did we get here so quickly?
Because we're having so much fun, and that's just what happens when you have fun, right? Time just flies by, and it's December already. It's playoff time. So hope all of you listening on the All 22 platform advanced to your playoffs. If not, that's okay. That means it's just time to scout and look forward to the draft. That's the great thing about All 22 is that there's always something to look forward to, no matter where you stack in your league standing. So congratulations if you made the playoffs, and get to work if you didn't, because as you'll kind of notice here, we're going to be increasing some draft coverage here in the coming weeks and months, because that is also a wonderful time of year. But it's playoff time, and yeah, it happened in the blink. So yeah, how do you think the season went for you overall, Chris?
In All 22, it went fantastic. I mean, I think as the creator of a platform, it's pretty you have a little bit of an advantage over some people, right? So I'm in about 10 to 12 leagues. I can't even tell you anymore. And I think I made the playoffs in all but one. Shout out to John and Andy and Greg and other Greg and all the guys in the You Got Moss League. They knocked me out of the playoffs with a team that I thought was going to be one of the best teams I've ever had. And it just didn't pan out this year. So shout out to all you guys. I hope you enjoyed the year.
Wow, good for them. Kudos to them. Yeah, mighty have fallen. We have a bit of an advantage, but we try to stay humble, you know.
How did you do?
I'm about a 75% hit rate on playoff advancements. A couple of trades I would have liked to make here or there that I was just a week late on, because while you have an advantage as the founder of a platform, also sometimes the work on that platform takes you away from some of the things you want to do for your actual teams. So that kind of tripped me up a few places here or there, but it is what it is. We truck on. And again, we just want to give you some of the latest and greatest as far as news analysis and all that good stuff goes each and every week. We kind of set you up for the advantageous schedules for the playoff run last week. So there's some more timely stuff we want to get into this episode as well that could impact your rosters moving forward here for the next several weeks. Or again, if you're out into the future as well over the next couple of years, not just the next couple of weeks for the playoff team. So try to have a little something for everybody.
Definitely. I mean, dude, this was one of the most wild years in fantasy for me, because like outside of even the All 22 platform, I'm in an ESPN league with like some family, people that like aren't super into fantasy. So it's just a fun way to get everybody involved, right? I missed out on the playoffs because I forgot to start a tight end one week, and I had Brock Bowers and Trey McBride. So like my team was nasty, and I forgot to start one of them, and they had like 20 something points that week.
How did you not start one? Was it just a blank spot?
Yes. And I missed the playoffs by 3 points. Like somebody had the same record as me, yada, yada, yada. And I missed the playoffs by 3 points. We are busy. Sometimes we don't get to check every single league, unfortunately. But we enjoyed so much.
Auto sub. Could have helped.
Yeah. Thanks, Sleeper, for stealing that one. Anyway, yes, we do have some news, though, right? Garrett Bowles signed a massive extension today. 4 years, $82 million. It makes him the eighth highest paid tackle at $20.5 million per year, which is actually kind of crazy because there's now two guards that make more money than a top 10 tackle, which is just telling you where we are in life right now, right? He is the eighth highest scoring tackle in All 22, and he's the 15th highest graded tackle currently in PFF with a 77.6 grade. Ray, I don't know what else you got on stats for him, or just if we want to get into what we think about the deal.
Yeah, what's impressive about Garrett Bowles is, I mean, so far this season, he's only given up 2 quarterback hits, 1 sack, 11 total hurries in pass protection. So again, it's a known name. People have positive opinions of Garrett Bowles, but he's not one of the 4 or 5 names that you hear when you just rattle off who are the top offensive tackles in the NFL, right? He's normally another rung or two below that, but he's just been incredibly steady this year. I think he's like 5th overall out of all offensive tackles with at least 300 passing snaps or something to that effect in pass blocking efficiency in the NFL. So he's been incredibly steady and consistent this year. And I think when you look at the Broncos as a whole, they're 8-5. Nobody expected that at all. We thought they were in for a rough couple of years. I mean, we really dogged them this offseason, given their situation. I think, I mean, overall, it's going to catch up to them. I mean, with the cap hit that they're taking after the Russell Wilson saga and everything that goes into that, and the overall talent level probably isn't where it needs to be. But for them to be 8-5 and playoff contenders with a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix, and the overall talent level on that squad is incredibly impressive. And you have to give credit to Sean Payton, obviously. But when you look under the hood, it's because guys like Garrett Bowles are producing at a high level consistently week in and week out at some of the most important spots on your roster.
That's exactly right. Something I thought was pretty interesting, though, is that he signed this deal before the offseason. Being a top 10 tackle in the NFL, top 15 tackle in the NFL, not a lot of those guys hit free agency. And when they do, they usually become the highest paid tackle in the NFL. So for him to kind of like pass up that opportunity maybe goes to show that Denver feels like they have something special going. Everybody on the team is bought in. Maybe they believe in the coaching there. They believe in Bo Nix, right? Sometimes a quarterback can even do that. So I found that pretty interesting. But Garrett Bowles is a very good player, right? He is that tried and true player. I think there's like a few tackles in the NFL right now. Jake Matthews was kind of this for a while, right? But there's a bunch of these guys that are just like, they're never going to be top 5 tackles in the NFL, but they're always going to be good. And when you have one, that's a really valuable thing to have. So you just continue, right? Like, you want to buy in. Giving him that four-year deal, I don't see anything wrong with that. But shout out to him as well, because this is his second contract where he got an actual like extension. I think he's made like $140 million after this deal already, like big time money for him. So that's great to see. The other thing that was popped up on the news today, Dre Greenlaw is going to return tonight for the 49ers after suffering a pretty nasty injury in the playoffs last year. Last year, he was PFF's 21st ranked linebacker, 73.1 defensive grade. But the thing that made Greenlaw so special, 79.5 coverage grade. This is one of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL, and he's set to be a free agent at the end of this season. So it's nice to see him get back before the end to show teams, hey, I can still do this. I'm still fully capable. I'm the best coverage linebacker in the NFL potentially, and I deserve big money, right? I think there's a ton of teams that would love to have a player like we saw Greenlaw play in 2023. This is a guy that plays ferocious football, and he's back. I'm pumped to see it, especially against a Rams offense, which throws the ball so effectively. How does Greenlaw make that impact?
Yeah, and I imagine he's going to be on some sort of pitch count tonight, given it's his first game back from a serious, you know, Achilles injury. So I assume they're going to work him in. And typically, I would not like a matchup against Sean McVay and the Rams for any linebacker returning from a long injury. But I imagine he's pretty darn familiar with that opponent, you know, division rival and the whole nine there. So from an all 22 perspective, it's not something I would, you know, change my lineup over. I would not put Greenlaw in my starting lineup. I'm not sure he may or may not, you know, sort of hover around that snap minimum, but you kind of, I think they're just going to work him into the lineup over the next couple of weeks and see if they can gear him for some sort of playoff run for whatever slim hopes they still have over there in San Francisco to make the playoffs. The early part of the season has not gone as they had hoped. But overall, it's good to see Greenlaw back on the field. I'm always cautious. I've said this over and over again. I'm a broken record when it comes to lower body injuries, like an Achilles, especially, for example. I'm extremely weary overall, especially when they first return. So I'm not expecting huge things from Greenlaw right away. But if he can be a steady veteran presence for a dozen, 15 snaps, perhaps over the next couple weeks, for a defense that has dealt with injuries, you know, on it, on each level kind of throughout the season, and maybe just be a stabilizing force there. I think that could be a big help, you know, that, that maybe isn't sort of outwardly front facing for the San Francisco 49ers.
And talking about Greenlaw kind of takes us to the next couple guys we wanted to talk about, where DeMarvion Overshown, sorry if I botched his name, suffers a really devastating knee injury a year after having a devastating knee injury, right? So like, this is a guy that now has suffered two pretty bad injuries very young in his career, very early in his career. And they're saying he might not just be out all of this season, the rest of this season, but potentially all of next season as well. He has a 62.1 season grade, but he showed a lot of upside and excellence, especially in his pass rush, 78.9 pass rushing grade. His struggle as a linebacker came with missed tackles. He had 19 missed tackles on the year, second in the NFL. But I mean, anybody that's watched Overshown play this year says, like, this is a really impressive young linebacker that I think any team would be really excited to have. And you as a fantasy owner, right, you're like, I got a linebacker. That's like so exciting, right, to hit on a linebacker. But this is really tough for him.
Yeah, it really is. He was looking like one of the few young cornerstone players for the Cowboys, and they've not gotten a lot of that over the last few draft classes. And for one of the few that they did hit on to now suffer a second significant knee injury, last year it was his left ACL in the preseason, missed all of the season. And then now this is a ACL, PCL, and MCL, I believe, to his right knee. So now it's reconstructive surgeries on both knees in the first 2 years of his career. So you really hope this doesn't become a what-if type of story, because he flashed so much potential and you kind of could squint and see what the future of the Cowboys defense could be when maybe they get back on their feet and there's a new coaching staff in the next coming years and Dak is healthy and what have you, and maybe they add a few more pieces. You have Micah, you have DeMarvion Overshown, Trayvon Diggs is back, Deron Bland, if they ever get those two on the field together at the same time. You kind of saw the pieces sort of coming together slowly. And for Overshown to now likely miss another full season in 2025, it's just a huge setback overall. And you just hope you can kind of see a semblance of the player that he was when he returns. It's really hard to do after a second significant injury to your knee, especially. So it's one of those you really hate to see. You hope he can come back for his sake. But just overall at a macro level, it's why it's really tough sometimes to invest in some players who have one significant knee injury in their past, because now you're just one away from real catastrophe, unfortunately.
And Jonathan Brooks is the other guy. You know, the good thing about Overshown is we did get to see almost, you know, 13 weeks of great play, and he looked amazing and he got us excited for him. And I'm sure he made a lot of fans, sold some jerseys as well. Jonathan Brooks, he was around for a couple weeks and suffers another devastating knee injury. He's going to be out for obviously the rest of this season. Running backs somehow tend to come back quickly from ACLs, but there's a chance he's out a lot of next season as well.
Yeah, and I mean, they signed Chuba Hubbard, so, and Chuba Hubbard is performing well. So in that sense, they're okay at running back. But now you go back to, again, the investment in Jonathan Brooks as a whole when he was coming off of a significant knee injury already. And this one is to the same knee. I believe it's his right knee. So it's the second tear to that same knee, which if you want to parse, you know, what is it? Split hairs or what have you. I think it's even worse. But again, when we start talking about the draft, and we're going to get into draft talk and the investment you put in these players, positional value comes into play. When you compare and contrast DeMarvion Overshown and Jonathan Brooks, for example, you could see at linebacker, linebackers are hard to find. We say it all the time. Someone like DeMarvion Overshown too is unique, especially. He's kind of that long athletic type of linebacker that really kind of hawks you down in space, right? He's not a box type, you know, 250-pound, you know, 6'2 middle linebacker that's kind of like, I don't want to say cookie cutter because that's obviously minimizing what they do, but someone of DeMarvion Overshown's profile is rare. So yes, you have an injury there. It's day two of the draft, I believe. You take a chance on a player like that, even if he might have some sort of injury medical history. When you shift to running back and the narrative around positional value there and the supply and demand of the position as a whole, why subject yourself to a running back with a significant injury in his recent history when now, again, you are one foot getting caught in the turf away from perhaps never being able to count on this asset again, and using a top 50 pick on him, a top 60 pick, it's tough to stomach and justify. So there's levels to this. There's no one size fits all rule when you try to account for injuries in the draft process and scouting and trying to team build and develop your roster and so forth. But you do have to weigh positional value, supply and demand when it comes to this sort of thing, because the Panthers, by and large, at running back are going to be fine because they have Chuba Hubbard and because you can find a runner in rounds four and five in the NFL draft in any given year. The Cowboys are going to have a tougher time replacing DeMarvian Overshown if he can't come back to form, because that type of player is harder to find. So again, those are just things to consider in team building overall, because you think it's not going to happen until it does. I mean, we've seen what happens with players with multiple knee injuries. I mean, just look at Odell Beckham. I mean, yes, it was the second tear was probably already on the downturn of his career, but I mean, he's pretty much completely done now. So again, just you have to keep these sorts of things in mind. It's an unfortunate truth and reality of the situation, but you can't ignore it just because it makes us uncomfortable, unfortunately.
I think you also have to be aware of what future drafts have as strengths, right? So we're talking about 2025 NFL draft, potentially having five or six running backs, all seemingly as capable, if not more capable, than Jonathan Brooks. So how do you spend the 14th pick in the second round on an injured running back that you probably won't be able to get anything out of till 2025 anyway, when the 2025 draft has a ton of guys that can do what Jonathan Brooks does? The other thing to look at, right, is guys that got picked around him. Tyler Newbin is showing that he's very capable, got picked the pick after Jonathan Brooks. Mason Smith, Chris Jenkins, Zach Frazier was picked at 19 in the second round, right? Like, think about how much money the Panthers spent on interior offensive line last year when they could have drafted Zach Frazier where they took Jonathan Brooks, right? And those are things that's team defining decisions, right? Like, that has years and years of effect on your team. And there's a ton of other guys I could talk about here, but Zach Frazier is the one that sticks out for me, because I think we all thought that he was going to be special. Tyler Newbin too, right? Like, those are two guys that are showing that they can be like legitimate pro starters in the NFL. And you chose an injured running back ahead of them a year before there's going to be a ton of really good running back. So all things to keep in mind. Obviously, we like Jonathan Brooks too. We thought he's a very talented running back. It's just, you got to be smart about the decisions you're making when you're making them. And it stinks for you as you know, all 22 players, when you probably made an investment in a Jonathan Brooks as well. Maybe you were holding on to him all year as well, you know, thinking the best would happen. You know, he'd come back towards the end of the season, show some hope, and you'd have a running back next year. But like, that does not seem to be the case. And, you know, you may have taken him in the fourth or fifth round of your all 22 rookie draft. Ray, let's change the conversation a bit. Let's talk about some positive things. In the 2024 season, we've just capped the regular season, right? We are now moving towards the playoffs, but we need to reflect and say, what were some of the biggest surprises of 2024? And I have a list of three. I don't know if you have any, because I don't prep you for any of this, but I'm thinking we can just talk through some of these and have a conversation. But for me, the biggest surprise I had at number one was Zach Bond finishing number one overall at linebacker with 34.1 season points, a 90 PFF grade, and 59 stops. Just for context, 59 stops is 10 more than any other linebacker in the NFL. Zach Bond, first year on the Eagles, they've reinvented this guy. He looks fantastic, and he fills a position they've struggled at for years, right? Years. But to see him now being the number one linebacker, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, and he can cover his ass off. He is the top coverage linebacker in the NFL. So, I mean, you add that on top of the number of stops that he's making at the line of scrimmage and impacting the game in the box. It's it's unreal. And for a 28-year-old player, near 28-year-old player to have this type of renaissance is a huge boost for your team or for the Eagles in this instance, as far as solidifying, kind of like becoming that glue of the defense. When you have a player like that in the second level, not third, it really just kind of brings everything together. And yeah, he's been absolutely phenomenal. We've highlighted him a few times throughout the season. And again, it's linebacker. We kind of, not that we wait for it, but you expect at some point to have some sort of drop off, even a slump for 2 or 3 weeks. And it just has not happened. He has been the epitome of consistency at a position that really does not lend itself to that sort of consistency. So he was a hot waiver pickup after the first few weeks of the season. Probably can't get him anymore. And if you did, you, assuming the rest of your roster is, you know, relatively of quality stature, you're probably in the playoffs. And now you have a real plus value add player at a position where those are extremely hard to find week to week in Zach Bond. So huge impact there for sure. A nice positive, you know, feel good story, if you will, because, you know, the Eagles just need all the feel good sort of pleasant surprises they can get, because they totally don't have a ton of talented players on that roster that just fall to them in the draft. But one other surprise in the positive sense, which we kind of labeled, or at least I did, as a boomer bust type of player, is Brian Thomas Jr. I want to highlight him for a bit, because the Jaguars haven't had much to cheer about all season. But Brian Thomas Jr. has been an incredible, you know, sort of just revelation as a rookie in the platform. He is the fourth highest scoring receiver out of all receivers for the season, throughout the regular season. So it at a place where, again, everything has just kind of fallen apart there in Jacksonville. The lack of talent and everything else has really caught up to them. Some injuries, no more Trevor Lawrence. So perhaps you see a little bit of a dip just naturally. But we thought Brian Thomas Jr. was a bit of an unrefined type of player who had all the tools coming into the NFL, but may have needed some time and some stability. And while we kind of liked the fit of a good deep threat with Trevor Lawrence, we figured it would still take some time. And it really has not. From the get-go, he's performed really well. He's played as like a rookie for maybe 3 or 4 weeks or so of the season, but by and large, he's been an incredible player for the majority of this season here, and now someone you can be comfortable with in your lineup every week, you know, moving forward, whether it's the remainder of the playoffs, you know, quarterback situation maybe, but outside of that, moving forward for your franchise and your roster, yeah, Brian Thomas Jr. is a cornerstone guy. So he hit, and he hit early, much earlier than we could have anticipated. So I'm happy for that.
Absolutely. And not to take anything away from Brian Thomas Jr., but I think we need to do a better job as well. Is like, yes, it's one thing to judge them as prospects, but once they get their landing place, pairing him with Trevor Lawrence, he is easily the most talented receiver Trevor Lawrence has gotten to play with in the NFL. Like, I don't think that's a question. So it does not surprise me that somebody as talented as Trevor Lawrence would also make somebody with a lot of talent successful, right? I think that match is perfect. I actually had that on my list of three as well, but it was a bigger bucket. It's underrated rookie phenoms, right? I think Brian Thomas Jr. is one of them. But what about Jared Verse, 19th overall pick in the NFL draft? He's the fourth highest graded highest scoring edge rusher in all 22, 54.9 points with an 84.1 PFF season grade. He's been fantastic, and he was a more mature prospect. He stayed in school a little longer, so it's not surprising to me that he did hit, but it's really more the level that he hit at, right? Fourth overall in all 22 points is insane as a rookie. Brock Bowers as well, right? Like, that's, I keep talking about the hit I took there, 13th overall pick, but he is the highest scoring tight end in all 22, 31.2 points. That's not just rookies, right? That's everybody. So fantastic job by Brock Bowers. Dog screaming in the background. Sorry about that. But the last one in the rookie underdrafted rookie phenoms is Dominique Pooney, 87th overall in the NFL draft. He is the seventh highest scoring guard with 38 points, 85.2 season grade for PFF. Like, this guy, you know, again, it's like you have to think more than just the talent and what the talent tells you, because landing spot is so important for rookies. You think about a guard going to San Francisco getting to play on the same line as Trent Williams, getting to play in an offense that has tons of weapons, not to take away from anything that he's doing, right? He's doing fantastic, but sometimes there are systems that guys land in that just lend themselves to being more successful than other teams, other positions, right? You could say running back in Miami, right? It's like, it's things like that, that it's just different. You have to pay attention to those. How do you learn a lesson from what we're seeing in these guys getting doing so well? It's that's the thing you have to think about. What can we learn? I think it's a landing spot sometimes will over, you know, outweigh talent.
Yeah, I'll tell you which one really surprises me from that list, and not because I didn't think he was a good player, but Jared Verse, the first name you mentioned, because I thought it would be an adjustment when he realized he can't just come in and overpower offensive tackles in the NFL the way he did in college, as far as just pushing them back into the quarterback. But that's exactly what he's still doing in the NFL. We had a nice clip of him doing that a couple weeks back on primetime TV. So Versus hit the ground running in a manner that doesn't typically translate to the NFL. So that's the most surprising thing there, not necessarily that he's ultimately a good player. But I think we mentioned this name earlier, too, in one of our earlier season episodes. But Christian Benford is another one, grading out as a top six corner after being drafted in the sixth round in 2022. He had a very solid 2023 season, but still kind of flew under the radar, wasn't a household name, probably still isn't a household name, even though he should be, grading again as the sixth highest graded cover corner in pass coverage in the league today. He's given up just in total on the year 223 yards in receiving, and we are entering week 15. So in what, 13 games, what's that average out to 20 yards or so per game given up, if so. He's a phenomenal, just 6'1", 200 pounds, kind of exactly what you're looking for. Just another late round hit for an organization that is finding diamonds in the rough and these gems late in the draft. And that's why the Bills are a top Super Bowl contender. Yes, Josh Allen gets all the pub and all the notoriety there. And yes, people will sometimes talk about Greg Rousseau when they talk about the defense and so forth. But it's guys like Christian Benford around the margins that elevate this team to an actually true contender. It's not just the headliners. It's guys like Christian Benford doing what he does best at a position like corner, where this is hard to find consistently, and he's been consistent really for 2 years now. So shout out to Christian Benford, another positive surprise this year.
Absolutely, great surprise. The last one I have here is the ageless wonders at the defensive interior position. Right now, Cam Hayward is the first, the highest scorer in all 22, 54.2 points, 90.3 PFF grade. He's 35 years old, but it's not just him and he's not alone. It's Calais Campbell as well. Fourth high scoring in all 22, 50.4 points, 82.1 PFF grade at 38 years old. Something's happening here, man. I need to have whatever they're drinking, whatever they're eating. It's working for them, but it does lend itself to the position, right? That is a position that you can play older, tackle, defensive interior, something about the trenches, right? Where maybe it's not all about agility, right? Like you tend to maybe be able to last a little bit longer, but I am shocked that I'm sitting here in week 15 and two of the four highest scoring defensive interiors are 35 or older.
Yes, it's the grown man strength. I think that's what it is in those trenches. Speaking of trenches, I'm surprised you didn't name somebody, your boy, Zach Tom.
Oh, I thought that would have been your I was name. I was going to, he finished second, right?
yeah, exactly. Finished second right now. So, highly graded offensive tackle. I literally saw that and I was like, I'm not going to put this down because I'm sure Chris has it. So I don't even have any notes on Zach Tom other than he's obviously been playing well this season and I've made note of that. But second highest scoring offensive tackle in all 22 for the regular season, Zach Tom of the Packers here. So, good on him for your boy. And then you also have that corner you keep telling me about. You didn't mention his name, so maybe he had a bad game last week and I just didn't realize. I forget his name. It's something with a Y or something. I don't know. The dude in Miami that you love so much.
Kid in Tampa.
Tampa, yeah, whatever. It is Florida, same thing. I think overall the trenches lend itself to that advanced age, that kind of that long-lasting. It's still going to take a lot for me to consider drafting a 34, 35-year-old player at any non-quarterback position to my team, because I feel like at some point the cliff just sort of happens. But if you're more than willing to take that on, it's paid off for you so far. So kudos to you. Kudos to you for that. I don't have any others because I did write down Jared Verse as well. So when you kind of covered that one already, but yeah, that's, I like the positivity in this segment. It was pretty good. I'm going to keep it going here just off the cuff because I cut him earlier on, as you've heard me say in previous episodes. Kirby Joseph, highest scoring safety as well in the league so far. Detroit, another legitimate Super Bowl contender because of guys like Kirby Joseph elevating their game as well. Not just the defensive line being a menace or the offense being high flying and having an effective ground game. Yes, that all goes into it, but it's guys like Kirby Joseph where, yes, the secondary as a whole might not be the strongest, but if you have someone at safety playing at the top of their position in the league, that does somewhat, no pun, kind of put a lid on the leakage, if you will, in the back end of your defense and kind of help clean things up a bit, even if it's not the strongest unit on your team overall. It does enough to allow the cornerstones of your team to sort of take over games week in and week out. So Kirby Joseph being a playmaker as well, but again, just sort of solidifying as best he could the back end of that defense to allow the Lions to take over games in the manner that they have, is another sort of underrated talking point here. Some, again, just something people are not talking about enough, but kudos to Kirby Joseph. It's guys like him that had the Lions in prime position this season.
Absolutely. That safety duo in general is just doing insane things. Let's move to the draft, right? We want to talk about the draft a little bit because we know, again, there's some of you out there, you're not in the playoffs. And yes, you could be sad about it or you could prepare, right? And it's time to prepare. The draft order has been shaken up a little bit. We talked about last week, the Raiders were at number 4. They're currently projected to be number 1 after last week. This is going to get wild, guys, because it's the Raiders and the Giants are 1 and 2. How does this, do either of them try to win a game for the rest of the season? Those are the two teams, I think, that probably have the biggest need at quarterback in the NFL. They're going to be fighting out for that number 1 spot in a draft where we talked about it. There might not be a guy, there might not be Trevor Lawrence or Caleb Williams in this draft. Not that there's not good players, but these guys are fighting for that number one spot to maybe get the guy they believe in over the consensus guy, right? It could be that the Giants like Cam Ward better than Shador. Who knows, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But the Raiders move to 1, Giants are at 2, Patriots go from 1 to 3, Panthers go from 3 to 4, Jags stay at 5, Titans at 6, Jets go from 8 to 7, Browns are at, go from 7 to 8, Bears are at 9, Saints are at 10, excuse me. Like I said, I think the quarterback shakeout is really what's going to be interesting to me. Is there anything about the order, Ray, that's kind of standing out to you?
Not necessarily so much the order, but there's been some speculation, I think, after some comments from T. Higgins this past week, about like Joe Burrow kind of sticking up for him and, you know, wanting him there long term, and T. Higgins kind of being noncommittal in his tone. I think people see the writing on the wall as far as T. Higgins not being there next season and beyond. And I think beyond that, some people are starting to connect the dots, and there's some scuttlebutt about the Patriots, for example, making a big play for T. Higgins because of the cap space that they're going to have. They obviously have Drake May, a young quarterback, and he needs wide receivers. So it makes a ton of sense. It allows him to be a number one player and get a big contract, all that fun stuff. But to me, that should not change the draft strategy for the Patriots, if you will. If they're picking in the top 6, there is no offensive tackle that appears to be worthy of a top 6 pick in this class. So you can't reach for need that high in the draft. That's kind of how you end up staying that high in the draft year over year. So while, yes, some people are starting to connect the dots and then, you know, they're starting to mock Tet McMillan elsewhere, maybe to Dallas or something like that, I would not let that impact. Again, we're still so far off. I don't want to like make this a mock draft segment, but I just mean in the sense of when you look at teams and their profiles and their needs, free agency should be something that solidifies your roster enough to where you can go out and get the best player available in the draft. You want to use free agency to allow yourself to at least field a team if you had to go out there and play a game in a parking lot the next day. So with that in mind, that should not preclude you from taking the best player in the draft. So if you sign T. Higgins and when you're on the clock, Tet McMillan is the best player, take Tet McMillan or Travis Hunter if he's there and you consider him a wide receiver, just throwing names out there. So don't get too caught up in the free agency narrative when it comes to the top end of the draft, because the best players in the draft are still in a tier of their own. It's not that you just cross off a position off the list and then you go, okay, yeah, let's take Will Campbell when Will Campbell might be player 20 on your board and you're picking sixth. That you can't do that as a team and a roster. So keep that in mind, because the order is going to shake out. It's December. There's still a few weeks left. Things get a little crazy. So we'll see how things end up overall. But just something to keep in mind, especially at the top of the draft, do not deviate too far from best player available when you're either doing your mocks or just, you know, writing reports on these guys or what have you. Don't read too far into it other than that. So that's my thing. Don't let free agency screw up the draft process. When you mix the two, bad things happen.
I typically agree with you, but I do think that you do need to be a little bit more creative and decide, if I get T. Higgins, should I maybe trade back, right? Like, is the need not as significant? And I think about the Bears and what the Bears did last year. You know, obviously you get Caleb Williams and you want to pair him with, you know, Rome Odunze, the wide receiver, and it makes a lot of sense on paper, but you just got DJ Moore. You get Keenan Allen, right? Like, your receiving core has had a total makeover and it's in good shape. And you go get Rome, and not that Rome has been bad. Rome has been very good, but you just think about the additional value maybe a stud offensive lineman would have been for the Bears, because I think they are still struggling with that. Or even, you know, their defense has been a little bit up and down this year. Would an edge rusher, would a Latu, would a Byron Murphy, Jared Verse, right? Would one of those guys made such an impact? And that's why it's like, yes, on paper, Rome was probably in their eyes the highest graded player on their big board, so they went and got him. Great. You pair him with Caleb long term, it's probably going to be fantastic. But like, there are fundamental things that you also need to make sure, and that really does start in the trenches. And I feel like going away from that, it gets a little murky. So while Tet McMillan may be the best on the board for the Patriots at three, yes, there might not be an offensive lineman worth a top five pick. Trade back three, four spots and go get Kelvin Banks, go get Will Campbell from LSU, whoever it is, right? Whoever you deem to be the best. Trade back, get some additional draft ammo, pick more times, right? Pick as many times as you can. But I do like Ted a lot, and I think it wouldn't be a bad pick. But I think about Drake May and what's going to be so important for his development. And it's really going to be getting that wide receiver for him, but really making sure that offensive line is a safe place for him to go to work every day, right? I work in Times Square sometimes. It's not always the safest place for me to go to work. Like, get your offensive line in shape.
Draft Will Campbell to guide you to the way it works now.
Sometimes I feel that way.
Listen, I'll say this because we're talking about the Patriots, but this goes for everybody, okay? I'm not trading away from Abdul Carter. I like Keon White and I like Anfernee Jennings. Okay. They're cool players. I'm not trading away from Abdul Carter because I signed a wide receiver. I'm just saying, like, when you have a player that good, you can't trade away from guys like that. To me, you trade away if the very top tier of your board is gone and then the need doesn't fit where you are. And then obviously someone has to be willing to trade up for something else. But if you have an elite player, you have the opportunity to get an elite player. I know some people disagree. So we have some overlap with, people who listen to Sam Monson. I know he's a big proponent of, hey, don't act like you are better than the system when it comes to this. Trade down and have more opportunities to get good players. Sure, I get that. But I believe enough in my evaluation when it comes to identifying elite talent that you don't want to trade away from that. So yeah, Patriots, don't trade away from Abdul Carter. I just don't think Will Campbell's in the cards. He's too far down. Okay. He's just not, it just doesn't work. Sometimes, you know, like, you have a good guy, nice lady, but like, it's timing was never right. Timing might just not ever be right here. And they might have to go somewhere else for their offensive line needs. Because I get what you're saying and agree. You do have to play the draft to that, in that aspect, but I don't want to trade away from an elite player to do it, or an elite player at a position of need. If it's an elite running back, again, not to poo-poo running backs this whole episode, which I feel like I've done, because Ashton Jeanty's phenomenal, but I could pick up a second running back or pick up a running back in the second. can't find Abdul Carter in the second round. Yeah, I know your alarm is telling me to get on with it. I thought we had another half hour here, but I guess not. That's all I'm saying. Don't trade away from the elite players. Now you're doing it on purpose.
No, I'm back now. All right. Yeah. Abdul Carter is exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, yes, the wide receiver on your big board might be a little bit higher, but if you have Abdul Carter there and you think he's also an elite prospect at a different position of need, that's also a massive position of need at an important position, get Abdul Carter, because I'm thinking the impact is going to be greater for the team. But yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about on this draft. One thing I did want to talk about draft related was Drew Aller. And I'm going to get you a little revved up here, but I had not watched Drew Aller much this year. A couple games I've tuned in, saw some good, some bad. But I think he had a performance last week that was so reminiscent of Sam Darnold or CJ Stroud, where they had that one game and it changes everybody's mind, where they're like, well, he could do this, this, and this, but can he do this? And it's like, they have that one game and they show everybody they could do everything, and they go and they get drafted, and they, you know, they get drafted really high. Drew Aller showed me this weekend that he deserves to be in the conversation as one of the best quarterbacks in this draft. I still think, and if Sam Darnold is a great, great example of this, the best thing for him to do would be to go back to school and show it consistently for a season, right? That he can do all of those things so that he could be the number one draft pick next year. But I will say, I wanted to tell you, right, that I watched the game and I was really impressed. I think he's shown so much growth in that game that he really could be one of those complete quarterbacks.
So I talked to a lot of people in those circles, obviously. What you are saying is feedback that was given by people in the NFL who traveled to the Big Ten championship game. The narrative around, or not the narrative, but the truth of the matter at Penn State currently the last couple of years is their weakest spot on the roster has been wide receiver. So you mentioned Sam Darnold's big game in the Rose Bowl. You mentioned CJ Stroud in the playoff. CJ Stroud was throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. and maybe Olave that year. I'm not sure the overlap, but he was throwing to day one receivers at Ohio State, like three of them. Sam Darnold had Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe Deontay Burnett, good college player back then, but he had some weapons. Drew Aller doesn't have that. He doesn't have a day one or two receiver on his roster right now. What he has is a tight end, and they are milking that for all it's worth in that offense. But again, he's running a passing offense where the number one weapon is a tight end. And you don't see that too often nowadays because that's not a great recipe for success overall. So that kind of reared itself at the end of the game with a late interception when he tried to take a chance at a 50-50 ball on second and one late in the game. And it came back to bite him with a pick, and receiver just never got positioning and so forth. So that's just one thing to keep in mind at a high level when you evaluate this. But to your point, as I understand it, the chances are that Drew Aller returns to school for another year. I think most agree he could use another year of seasoning, which is, you know, kind of what he showed overall this season as well. You know, despite all the highlights and the high marks, is that he could use another year. And it's a whole nother conversation that's philosophical that you can get into as far as, if I don't believe in someone, if he were to come out, draft Drew Aller 1 year early as opposed to someone like a Shedeur Sanders, if I believe that I can't really fix the time to throw issue that has derailed so many other talented quarterbacks, right? That's a whole nother separate conversation. But overall, to your, I think your broader point, and you're a big proponent of this, you like quarterbacks who stay in college and get that extra year of seasoning. I don't know if the magic number is 30 starts or whatever it is for you in college, but that magic number of starts and experience that lends itself to success in the NFL, Drew's kind of on that path and needs it there. So another name to kind of file away, likely won't be brought up in this draft cycle because I believe he's going to come back to school. But that overall sort of theme is just sort of, it's every year it comes up and when you talk quarterbacks. And so just a name to keep in mind, but I'm glad you watch and are starting to kind of see the light. I could show you more, and you know, I'll sit down and teach you a thing or two when we watch some tape on Drew Aller.
All right. Bet. I mean, there are also like reminiscence of Justin Herbert's senior year where he didn't really have a lot of good weapons in that offense, but you know, was doing really good things and developing as a quarterback. And sometimes you don't see it, right? Sometimes like the numbers don't reflect the growth that you have by staying. Doesn't mean you're not growing, right? And I think that that's what I'm seeing in Drew Aller, right? Like maybe some of the numbers aren't fantastic, but I saw a lot of growth when you watched the film. So I did really like that. But speaking of, that's another thing that just like draft related we could get into really quickly is what impact is the Minnesota Vikings decision on Darnold and JJ McCarthy going to have on all of this? And while you answer that question, I'm going to turn on my lights because the sun's going down. Give me
one. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Just keep going.
Far away. Yeah. So I don't know why I'm going to continue. It's just the way this episode is going. I'm just going to harp on knee injuries now. Like, okay, Minnesota, you have a good quarterback. You want to let that go for a guy who had knee surgery and then had a complication / setback and another knee surgery a month or two later. Yeah, he's young and may ultimately come back. And I get you spent a first round pick on him, but I don't know. You're taking a bit of a gamble there. But overall, just the Vikings found their guy. And after years, or not really after years, but after Kirk Cousins, rather, they found someone who was younger and could, you know, solidify that position for years. And now they might just let him go. It's you're taking a gamble on a player that, again, it's not like JJ McCarthy is this sure thing. I mean, he had everything set up for him well in college. Even if you put aside, I'm not going to mention Connor Stallions. I just did because, of course, I'm going to mention Connor Stallions. But in general, I mean, he had a fantastic offensive line, experienced offensive line, the most experienced roster in college football in years, if not history. They had over 45 seniors in his final year of college. An incredibly strong running game. He wasn't asked to do much at all relative to most other quarterbacks that get drafted into the NFL. So you're taking a bit of a gamble on the profile as it is. The knee injury, whatever, might not be that big of a deal, but you have a bird in the hand and you're kind of letting it go. And maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask this question to because I've been on Sam Darnold's train forever. And now that he's finally showing something, the Vikings are going to pivot in a different direction because they invested a first round pick in JJ McCarthy. It's a gamble. And I get it. They're in a bit of a tough spot, but it's a gamble and you're letting go of a quality quarterback. And sometimes you have to really simplify things down to you are letting go of a good quarterback. Since when is that a good idea ever?
You have to be so sure that JJ McCarthy is as good as you think he is, because yes, there's a huge advantage in having a rookie contract at quarterback. It's a huge advantage, but I don't think Sam Darnold is going to be paid as a top 8 quarterback in the NFL. I think he lands somewhere in that Baker Mayfield contract, which is very reasonable for teams today. And you can have a very successful roster around that. So I don't think there's any harm in keeping Sam Darnold on that type of a deal. But if you decide to move on from him, it means to me that they think JJ McCarthy is really special, right? And if not, I don't think there's any harm in keeping both of them because, again, he's on a rookie contract, McCarthy, and it's not like it's going to have financial impact on your team. So keep them both. But I don't think you can really let Sam Darnold leave either, which means that they're either going to keep both of them or you trade away JJ McCarthy. So is there a chance, right? Raiders, Giants, Titans, Jets, does a team like one of those teams say, you know, I didn't get the guy I wanted. One, you know, the Raiders took him before me, whoever it is. I'm going to trade for JJ McCarthy. And what does that compensation look like? What do you have to give to get, you know, a quarterback that's, you know, was a first round pick, was a top 12 pick last year, but, you know, tore his knee early, didn't really get that year of experience that you would want him to get. And now the team's saying that, that they're moving on, that he's not the guy, right? Like, what is the compensation? I think it'd be really hard for the Vikings to get a first round pick in return for a player with that, right? Usually when teams move on from a rookie quarterback, you don't get anywhere close to that kind of compensation. Granted, it's a little bit of a different situation because Sam Darnold came there and just proved himself. So it's not like they just don't like him, but I do think you lose a lot of the negotiating power if you decide to move on from JJ McCarthy. I would be interested to know what that looks like.
Yeah, my talking point would be Trey Lance just went for a fourth. So that's at least a second.
Justin Fields, what did Fields go for?
Oh gosh, I don't know. But I think
around there, right? Like thirds, fourth round picks. But I think you could probably get a second for McCarthy, but it's from a very desperate team.
Fields was a fourth and a sixth, I think. Something to that effect, or like a conditional fourth.
Those guys played and showed you that they're not it, right? I think it's a little bit different. And that's part of this, right? It's like J.J. McCarthy hasn't shown that. There's still an unknown. Do I think that's worth a first-round pick? I do not, especially not a top 10 pick for those teams that are really QB hungry. But if you're telling me it's pick 32 overall or 34, 34, if you're the Giants, I think that might be possible.
Yeah, probably a top second round type of deal. I would say. I'll be on the phone with the Pittsburgh Steelers. If Justin Fields is not their future, hey, you're a good team that doesn't have a long term answer at quarterback, and you are always successful enough to not pick highly enough to get one. Here's your chance. What do you think? And I'll try to work something out that way. You could get, maybe it's not as high as second, but you add in a third or something. Whatever it is, you can work something out. Just the idea of someone who has had success is taking you to the playoffs. And it's not like he's 34 years old. Sam Darnold is what, 27? You got like 8 years of this guy. Letting go of that, either you're 100% sure of like McCarthy, like you said, which is, I guess, hard to do when he spent the season in the training room, or you have to keep the guy that's performing well. I don't know how else to say it. He's not 33. So yeah, that would be the move. I'd be on the phone with the Steelers. I'd be on the phone with the Giants. I'd try to pivot them, pit them against each other, see if I can get a bit of a bidding war here. Maybe a second that can kind of turn into a first. Was that the Rodgers deal, right? Conditional second becomes a first if he plays X number of games. Something to that effect where, whoever the GM of the Steelers is, let's cut through the BS. You're a good team. You're going to have some success. You're not picking fifth overall in the next draft. So if McCarthy does well for you here, it turns into pick 20. Let's make something happen. Or you're going to go ahead and maybe have Russell Wilson for another year. And then what? You're going to go ahead and waste 2-3 years on the next Kenny Pickett because you don't draft high enough to get a good quarterback. What do you want to do here? And that's the pitch. So maybe I feel like I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but it's an interesting situation to watch play out of Minnesota because it's something you don't see very often nowadays with these quote unquote journeyman quarterbacks. But Darnold has played himself into this spot, and good for him for doing so.
Absolutely. I think the playoffs are going to be vital for him. If he goes to the playoffs and does well, I think the conversation changes and he's the guy. If he goes there and he lays an egg, I think they very realistically look at moving on. So we're going to follow that. We'll talk about that more. Playoffs are coming up in college football, so there's a lot of games to watch. Notre Dame and Indiana's Friday, December 10th. Benjamin Morrison, cornerback, is currently 19th on PFF's big board. Xavier Watts, safety, Notre Dame, 58th on the big board. And then on the Indiana side, Mikhail Kamara, Curtis Rourke, QB and edge, from Indiana, some guys to keep an eye on there. We got Penn State and SMU on the 21st, right? We talked about Drew Aller, right? Abdul Carter, Tyler Warren, guys just to keep an eye on in that game. We got Clemson and Texas, Blake Miller at tackle for Clemson, Barrett Carter, linebacker, Clemson, both guys that are around the top 100 on the big board. But Kelvin Banks Jr., Connor Williams, Quinn Ewers, there's the wide receivers out in Texas. Like, that Texas offense has a ton of guys to watch for the NFL for all 22. So keep an eye on that. And then we got Tennessee and Ohio State. James Pierce Jr., edge rusher from Tennessee. He was talked about as one of those top guys. Right now he's looking at the end of a first-round talent there. Omar Norman Lott, defensive interior for Tennessee, is somewhere around a second-round pick currently. Josh Simmons, tackle from Ohio State, ranked 15th. And my boy Emeka Egbuka, wide receiver, Ohio State, is currently at 16 on PFF's big board. Lot of talent to watch, guys. Like, when we are into this playoff race now for these college teams, these are all future NFL players that you're going to be able to watch and highlight. This is when you got to go scout.
Yeah, this is the fun stuff, right? And so one thing about the playoff, I mean, it's a little bit more than a week in between each game for a little extra rest here. But the college season is longer now, and we've seen some injuries take their toll, right? Even for some of these draft names that are going to be drafted or have their name called in in April, right? Unfortunately, Josh Simmons is out, for example. But overall, yeah, this is game, 13 for these guys now? And if they keep winning, it'll be game 14, 15, and so on, which is now pretty much a full NFL season. So we'll see how that impacts the whole rookie wall type of situation if college players get used to this sort of schedule moving forward. But yeah, lots of good names to watch for sure next week. And we'll probably have more leading into the round ones of the playoff next week as well. But exciting stuff. Football's abound. Thursday night football tonight. Again, just enjoy it. It's the best time of year. And best of luck to all your playoff teams.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. If you haven't yet, please give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all_PFF, and give us a review wherever you watch and listen to your podcast. Thank you and have a great day. I'm a ghost.